Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD HD. I'm Gregory Berg. And we're going to be spending most of today's morning show with the two candidates for the Racine Unified School District School Board, 4th District. We'll be talking today with Julie McKenna and Kimberly Plocky. And, of course, we did so yesterday with the two candidates for the 8th District. And still to come this week will be the candidates from the 9th District and the 5th District. And you can otherwise seek out the interviews that were done with the candidates for the other districts on the Education Matters archive found on our website, wgtd.org. But today, I'm very, very happy to welcome into our studios, as I said, Kimberly Plocky and Julie McKenna. We're going to begin with a word of introduction from each of them, and then we will proceed through an array of questions, pretty much a standardized set of questions that we are posing to each of the candidates in these four interviews, although with some mild variation here and there. And so, first of all, welcome to both of you to WGTD Studios, and we're going to hear from each of you, and we're going to begin alphabetically. So, Julie McKenna, please say a word about who you are, what you do, and also specifically what makes you so interested in the affairs of the Racine Unified School District and in being part of the school board.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to sponsor us this morning. And my name is Julie McKenna, and I currently work as a respiratory care practitioner 3 for the Wheaton Franciscan, which is a part of the Ascension of Wisconsin. I have one son that attended RUSD, received his diploma in 2015, and I have an educational background, bachelor's in music education from Augustana University. I have an associate's of respiratory degree from Dakota State University, and I also have a high school diploma from Lincoln Senior High School, most of my training in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I've been elected to the board since 1998, and I look forward to continue the work, and what makes me want to continue the work is I truly believe that education is a key to the success.
Very good. Thank you, and thank you for being here. Kimberly Plocky. Same question.
Good morning, and thank you also for having us today. I am born and raised in Racine area. I'm a product of Roosevelt Elementary School, Washington Junior High, graduate of Horlick and Parkside. And I've had the honor of, in my past, serving in both the State Assembly and the State Senate. So public service on the state level for the community. Also, through my day job with WEDA, Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority, Racine is one of the counties in which I work with local partners to advance home ownership, business expansion, and affordable rental opportunities. I have a daughter who is currently a senior at Case High School, graduating this year, and so I, too, have been involved in the schools as a parent. But serving on the Racine School Board, I would say, given all of my past and the opportunities I've had, I still think this is the most critical community service that I have been involved in for our community. There's probably no more important institution that can affect the future of our community and families and well-being other than the school district. So that's what drives me to stay involved.
Thank you. Thank you again to both of you for being here and participating in this morning's show. So often these kind of forums end up focusing on a host of negative issues, of problems and concerns, as well they should. But let's take a moment right at the top to give each of you an opportunity to talk about one thing about the Racine Unified School District which strikes you as a success story, as a positive which needs to be celebrated. Kimberly Plocky.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the gains that we've made in Racine Unified School District in early grades in reading and math. When we brought Superintendent Hawes to the district, one of the very first things she did is bring some educational programs, tools, and also the professional development for our teachers to apply those tools, and we have seen very significant growth in our testing that tests students in the beginning of the year and then again at the end of the year. So where did they start and where did they get to? And one of the most exciting parts of that is that we saw that across all populations in the school district. We're going to continue with these tools as the students move into third, fourth, fifth grade, and I think that we're going to see great results in the long run. So I'm really excited about supporting those changes and seeing the benefits.
Julie McKenna.
Academically, the graduation rate's improving is very exciting. I also am impressed that the lower grades are getting better, and I've also seen through the years that the scores are little by little moving in the right direction, maybe not as fast as we like, but we're improving. We're not going the other way. One of the things that excites me for the students is I see almost on a daily basis is that our students are succeeding. They're winning competitions. We have a national scholar. We have Horlick Music Program winning awards in New York City. We have our cheerleading in Horlick winning competitions. Our Park High School winning in the athletics, breaking state records. And so it's exciting time for the students. And if you talk to the students, it's very, ones that are studying biomed, they're achieving many, many, many things. And our automobile program is also achieving national status. So there's I see awards almost, achievements of our students almost every day.
Very good. One of the things that seems to be sweeping across public education, not only here in Wisconsin, but across the country, is a focus on standardized test scores as being the most significant benchmark by which to measure the success of a given student, or collectively the success or failure of a particular school or a school district. What is your feeling about our dependence on and or devotion to test scores, especially standardized test scores? Do you feel like we are giving the proper emphasis to that? Should they be emphasized even more? Or are we emphasizing them too much? What is your perspective on that? Julie McKenna.
Probably we're emphasizing too much, but the biggest barrier to the standardized testing is the expectations are continuously changing. The test can go from one grade level to two grade levels. The state decides that they want our students to learn different things, and so we're always trying to catch up or try to find out. So I'm not sure. I think testing is good, but you have to almost have the same test. The basics should be the same throughout the years. If they want to add different things beyond it, that's fine, but when they keep on changing the level of what they expect, you can't trend. Wisconsin this last year changed their testing again, and of course all the scores are really low. But it doesn't mean our students are succeeding. It's just that they changed what they want them to learn. And that should stay the same. Otherwise, it makes it difficult. And testing does take a lot of time out of the curriculum, and not everybody's a good test taker. So it should be only one piece of the puzzle. There should be other things that they evaluate the learning on.
Kimberly Plocky.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about the state-mandated standardized tests and the emphasis and the way that that drives the direction local school districts have to keep switching in order to look good and do better. I would like to see joining of forces to impress upon our state elected officials that that's not really producing positive results. The testing that I think has been beneficial for the district is what we call the MAP testing, where an evaluation is done at the beginning of a grade for a student, and then a plan is developed for growth, and then a check-in at the end of the school year so that we can see how we're doing in the beginning and how we're ending up. And I do hear positive feedback about those exams as tools to help students get to where they need to be. But I am not at all a fan of the state-mandated tests. And then, as you know, Racine is a school district that has extremely liberal ability for vouchers for students to leave Racine Unified and go to voucher schools, and they are not tested equally as our students. And so we get criticized if we're not doing well, but then you're not seeing an even an accurate comparison. So I think that's an added problem.
One of the proposals underway within the Racine Unified School District is the possibility of going to more of an academy model for the high schools, with the intent that a larger number of high school students will be better prepared for essentially the world of work, and that they will find career paths and more careful, meticulous preparation for whatever career awaits them after high school. What is your own personal opinion on education being geared in this direction towards a model of career preparation, preparation for work, versus other models of education which are not maybe so solely focused on the world of work, but think about other aspects of education and regard them as equally valid? What is your feeling about this focus on career preparation in the world of education, particularly as it's being envisioned right now in the Racine Unified School District? Kimberly Plackey.
I see the career academies as a balancing of a focus. Traditionally and historically, there's been a very strong focus on preparing students for college, when we know that a vast majority of our students are not going to be going to college, then we have a problem because they're not necessarily seeing opportunities. And I wouldn't say that it's as much as a geared towards work as it is preparing students for productive lives after high school. And I'll just share a little personal story that I like to share. My daughter's a senior in high school, so I've had high school students around my house for a few years now. And what always troubles me is that I see a large number of students who are not heading towards college, which is okay, who might be more mechanically inclined or more technically inclined, but they have zero idea of the opportunities that are out there for them. And so I really see a large number of students, and these are not failing students. These are students who are working their way through high school, very much feeling disenfranchised from subject matter and the topics, and really not seeing the opportunities that might exist for them through technical education and jobs that maybe don't require an immediate college degree when they get out. And I think that this career pathways will assist students in seeing opportunities both technically and also academically, and will offer opportunities for choice but knowledge of what's available.
Julie McKenna.
I believe the career academies is one part, but in the beginning of the education, the secondary education, the founding fathers had believed that Europe sets their students up in an early age to go to a certain career path. China does that quite well. And the founding fathers felt that they didn't want to be forced into a career, that they want to have the choice. And their dream back then is in the secondary education is that the students would be able to explore what their true passion is and then follow their true passion into a career. And so I believe the career academies is something that I do agree that we have to link the careers out there and have the availability, but we also have to make it flexible enough that if a student finds that, hey, this is not what I thought I wanted, or I'm not interested in it, after finding that they have a choice that they can switch to a different career path. I had some students that tell me that they want, you know, sometimes they want a little bit of both. Maybe they want more academics, and maybe they have an interest in theater, and they don't want to be stuck in one place. So I believe the career academies is a good thing. They need to know, better prepared once they leave high school and what to do, or have an idea or a little bit a heads up on that. But I believe there should be some flexibility in the choices in the past.
For those of you just joining us, we're engaged in this portion of today's morning show in an interview with the two candidates in the 4th District of the Racine Unified School District, Julie McKenna and Kimberly Plocky, running for that particular seat for the 4th District of the Racine Unified School District School Board. And each of the morning shows this week is devoted to a different pair of candidates vying for a place on the school board. In keeping with the topic we were just discussing, namely this potential move towards academies in the high schools, one component of that will be a shift towards block scheduling, which involves longer periods of time spent for a given class. I'm curious about your own feelings on block scheduling. It has its great fans, and it has others that have real concerns about when education happens in that block scheduling format. What are your own feelings about block scheduling in general, and then specifically as it relates to how it might be implemented here in the Racine Unified School District under this particular plan? Julie McKenna.
I have mixed feelings on the block scheduling. I feel that there are students that will succeed with it. I feel that there are other students that will not. I believe that Racine Unified School District is a large enough district that we should have choices. Some students will thrive under that, some will not, and there should be choices or some options for the students that will not. The 90 minutes, depending on how you process things, some people will do well in the 90 minutes, other people need shorter time spans. Some people do better little by little each day, some people do good with it having it all at once, and that's the drawback. So as far as it goes to the career academies, I can see where that would work, because if you want to take a child out to, or a student out to experience a job opportunity, 45 minutes isn't going to do it. They need more than that to experience in that. And so I can see where that works. If I had my preference, I would have liked to seen the block scheduling go with the academies, that should have been phased at the same time. The sophomores and juniors and seniors next year will have the same curriculum they're having now, just in a different way. It would have been nice to have the newer curriculum along with the block scheduling. I think it would have been easier to plan, and they are taking an extra year to plan the academies for them, and it would have been nice to start with the freshman class and go up. It's really confusing for the students that are currently there, and for the parents, they don't know what to do, and they don't know what they're going to win out of that, or what choices that they'll gain, or what choices they may lose. And I think once that's out and pans out, it'll take about 4 years for that to pan out, but I believe there should be other choices for them, because some will do well, and some will not, and the ones that don't, they should have another choice. I believe that Walden and the Real School will not be in the academies, so that might be another choice, but there should be a traditional school as well that doesn't have the block scheduling, has a different schedule to meet the needs of the students that won't do well.
Kimberly Plocky.
Well, from what we've learned from experts out there who've been engaged in these endeavors for a long period of time is that it is important to implement block scheduling along with the career academies. And I personally feel and believe with all my heart that we have the most talented staff working with students in our district. And it's not that they'll have a new curriculum, but it'll be the delivery of the curriculum that needs to be modified. It's been really made clear to us as board members that the curriculum itself does not change, but it's the matter of delivery. And I do believe that ongoing and continuing professional development and as designed in the plan, coaches to work with our professionals to ensure the very best implementation possible is absolutely necessary. You know, we all know that change is kind of difficult. But if we keep doing things exactly the way we have, we will continue to get exactly the same results. And I do believe that the board and the superintendent is very cognizant about the needs for different students. And we are working very hard towards becoming a school district of choice, meaning that you can find the choice for your student and the best fit for your student. And I believe that will continue to be a very strong part of this.
One potential consequence of this move to block scheduling, if I understand correctly, is that each high school teacher will end up teaching one more class. I mean, one more class, presumably of 25 or more students. They will be instructing them, evaluating them, grading them, and so on, all the responsibilities that go with each class that one teaches. And as a result of that, my understanding is that there are certain teachers involved in certain enrichment or extracurricular activities who are planning to scale back or maybe even drop their involvement in that as a reflection of the added workload which they will incur because of the implementation of block scheduling. First of all, does this square with your understanding of the situation, and is that a source of concern to you? If you think that is a significant concern, what can be done about that to address it? Kimberly Plocky.
I would say that additional group of students, that is how all the other districts around us work currently. So they have extracurricular activities, and they're involved in those extracurricular activities. And I don't believe that that's been the case in Chattanooga. And I traveled to Rockford and had a chance to talk with some folks there. And that was not an effect in Rockford, and they teach those same number of periods or students. So, again, back to my point that change is difficult. We're dealing with a people organization. And I know in my organization, when big changes come down, I also feel uncomfortable. And that's human nature. But again, I think it's just really critical in the implementation and how we work with our professionals. And I don't see why we would end up with any less opportunities than other school districts where the teachers have the same workload. Mm-hmm.
Julie McKenna.
I just want to point out that Kenosha had block scheduling and did away with it because it didn't work for them, although they had a 4x4 block, so it's a little bit different than the A and B block that Racine Unified is doing. Rockford has decided not to go to the block scheduling of the academies. But getting back to the question is that some teachers are feeling the stress of doing it in a different way, and they feel that they have too much on their plate. And so some of the clubs beyond the school day that they would have volunteered to host to be advisor for that were getting some saying, this is too much, I'm not going to be able to do this. And so I think it's going to, I believe the superintendent has told me that she wasn't going to cut out those extra opportunities, but we may have trouble finding somebody to lead them at first because there's a lot to learn in a short period of time. It's a pretty big shift. And so I'm not sure what I do. The studies across the nation as far as block scheduling, what you said in some school districts has happened. They don't have the extra curricular outside the school day, and that the teachers are feeling stressed. And some of them, some school districts have made that up, maybe pay the teachers extra money for extra work. If you have the money to do that, and that's a challenge. So I do believe that it will be a challenge that they'll have to work through. I know it's the other challenge is, too, it's going to be a longer school day, and that's going to offer a challenge for those extra things. So I do agree with both sides there.
One reality with which the Racine Unified School District is contending, as are public school districts across the state of Wisconsin, is this new reality of the voucher system. And, of course, in Racine, we are seeing increasing numbers of students that are whose parents are taking advantage of the voucher system and are choosing private and parochial schools of one kind or another. What is your feeling about the current voucher system? Were it within your power, is it a system that you would change? Or do you feel like the voucher system, as it has been designed and implemented, in fact, is a fair system that should remain in place and a reality with which the Racine Unified School District just should continue to live with?
I believe the voucher system, if a school is receiving public money, then they should live with the same rules and regulations that all schools that receive public money. So it sets up a lot of inequities between the two. And the voucher, even though they passed legislation to include special needs for voucher schools, they have the right to refuse students. They don't have to accept them in their enrollment. So they can still pick and choose. Public schools takes everyone, and it's not equal. The public school also pays for the transportation of the voucher schools. The voucher schools doesn't have to pay that. We also provide services for special ed, in some instances, to the private schools. In addition, the state legislature, before they expanded the voucher system, had it that if you sent a student to a private school, you get a tax break. So it's a win-win for the parent of the private school because they can take it off their taxes, the tuition, plus they're getting money for the tuition. And so would I change it? Yes, I would say that anybody that would take public money should, you know, that they should the regulations and expectations should be the same. They should have to live by the same rules and pay for the same things.
Kimberly Plocky.
Yes, well, I have walked in the state shoes in the past, and when I had a state-elected role, I had the opportunity to take all kinds of positions on these issues and fight hard and have a vote and work on them. I'm not at all happy about how the voucher system affects Racine unfairly, especially in relationship to the rest of the state. But as a school board member, I work every day to ensure that we become a district of choice. I think as we close our achievement gaps and raise achievement for all, as we improve school safety, and as we develop these opportunities for students post-high school, I believe we absolutely need to be the place for the parents to choose. Vouchers are something that, as now as a school board member, I have to live with as a fact of life. And so I spend my time on that focus, working to ensure that we remain a unified school district of choice, because I fundamentally believe that divided we fall, united we succeed. And so the way we will do that is by being the place where people want their children to be.
I'm sure that both of you are well aware of a plan that was set out, first published, or at least publicized to the public, in the Sunday, March 20th edition of the Journal Times, a plan created or proposed, I should say, by RAMAC, that would be a comprehensive kind of long-term plan for both the city of Racine and the Racine Unified School District, a strongly worded statement, which, among other things, proposed that such a plan be crafted and then that plan strictly adhered to, followed without question. It's a proposal which has generated a great deal of comment, and I wonder from each of you what your opinion is of this RAMAC proposal for a comprehensive long-term plan to be created and then to be followed to the letter without deviation. What are your feelings about that?
As a board member, I've so far read that article in the paper and had a brief presentation before the board, but I have not seen or been part of developing a plan or seeing the details of a plan. And for me to take a position ultimately on it, that's a very critical part of it. As a school board, it's our responsibility. Education is the responsibility of the school board. We hire the professional who comes with the skills to lead our education progress. And I would not want to see that altered. I wonder what the agreement is. What's the agreement on the school board side? What's the agreement on the other aspects, the city's side? I think a lot of that needs to be fleshed out. I have more questions than conclusions, I guess I would say at this point.
Julie McKenna.
The master plan, I do agree that it's not clear. I believe that they were relating it to the educational plan for the whole county, starting with Racine Unified. Previously, we've had a committee of sorts of people around the county to include all the school districts to share ideas and to plan. The thing that concerns me is that their biggest point is that we get new board members, we get new superintendents. We don't want to change it. But the opposite's also true. They have new Racine County officials. They have new elected officials in Sturtevant and in Caledonia. And people are going to change, and your situations are going to change. And the biggest thing that disappointed me out of their plan is that they don't want the Board of Education whatsoever to be involved. And that concerns me. And we don't go in Caledonia and say, this is how you should run your business. We're not going to involve you, even though you're elected to be there. And so I have big concerns. I wouldn't mind having a committee of everybody together that visits the plan and makes recommendations and share ideas, because that's important, because somebody may have a piece of puzzle that somebody didn't think about that that enhances the system. But I would be opposed to leaving the Board of Education, the superintendent, out of it completely.
One of the concerns which I hear voiced from teachers, I know a lot of teachers, I live with a teacher, one of the concerns I hear raised quite often involves the matter of discipline and the fact that, of course, one of the realities with which a school district like Racine contends is that you are servicing a wide array of students, include many that walk through the door with all kinds of emotional or mental difficulties, sometimes students that are extremely disruptive, sometimes prone to violence and so on, and that there appears to be a policy in the school district, at least at the moment, in which teachers and even staff and some administrators are very strictly constrained in terms of what their response to such disruptive and even violent students can be. I wonder what your feeling is about the district's policies regarding this, and if you feel like these are policies that are well grounded and should be maintained, or if there are changes maybe that need to be made when it comes to this sensitive matter of how to deal with these kind of students. Julie McKenna.
We have a student code book that directs what happens, and I have to commend the superintendent's administration changing it to allow for a better way of dealing with the discipline issues as far as it concerns a student. It does lead, however, that if somebody's acting out, that we don't have them placed in the right situation or right curriculum or right getting that student's needs met. And so that draws conclusions that we may have to figure other ways to meet those needs of those students and the students of the class and different ways of differential learning, and not one size fits all. So you have to have different options. The students, I feel that once they leave, if they're acting out to leave the school, you want to keep them in the school, because once they find out that they can act up to leave, and that's what they want, is to be out of the situation they're in, it makes it really hard for them to come back and succeed. So it really puts an emphasis that we have to have more available in our current schools to handle that. Right now, we currently do not have enough resources and options to handle it within the school, and so oftentimes they are shifted out of the school, and then the options outside of the school are now full. So I believe that we have to have more resources within the school and within the district and the community to help make that work. And we do hear exciting things from Johnson School. We just heard a report, I believe, on the last board meeting of some techniques that they tried that helped. And so sometimes it's just a different techniques, but in different situations, but you have to have somebody to be able to lead you through and have to have the resource and coaches to make that work. And once you are able to fix the problem, we had one principal said that they saw less than 20 students less in their office. So it can be done, but I do agree it is very stressful for all involved when that happens.
Mm. Kimberly Blackie.
Yeah, this is a complex and multifaceted issue that is not solved with one simple answer. When Dr. Hawes came here, she impressed on all of us that the extremely high number of suspensions and expulsions that we had in Racine Unified, and especially with the very, very high number of students of color who were in that list, was placing us at great risk for a lawsuit. And so changes needed to take place. And instead of the ability to pretty easily remove a disruptive child from your class, it solved the problem in the classroom to an extent, but it didn't solve any problem in the bigger picture, because in the public schools, they keep coming back to another location. So they're not leaving us. They might leave a particular environment for an amount of time. And not getting an education is not helping any end means. So to be conforming with the law, there needs to be a due process. Students have the right to due process, as we have the right to due process. And that's a whole behavioral shift in a tough time. And so we have PBIS is a new way to deal with disruptive situations, and that has been getting implemented over time. We can't do everything all at once. But also I'd like to say that the addition of mental health partnerships in a couple of our schools, as was just referenced, with Children's Hospital, we're seeing some very dramatic improvements in addressing behaviors in different ways than strictly punitive. And so for the long-term health of our district and our community, because let's face it, these students, if they're not in the school, they're going to be in the community. We're not going to solve the problem that way. Is good, but we do have budget issues. We would love to be able to have a mental health clinic in every single elementary school. We have a great partnership with United Way. It's a community-funded and grant-funded, but to expand also Unified. But, you know, we have to make tough decisions within our budget and advance these things as we can. But I do know that on the board there's a very strong emphasis on moving in that direction. That combined with the increased test scores in those early grades, I mean, if you think about it, if you can't read if you come to school angry for whatever reason from outside of the school, and you can't read and you can't function in math and you're moving up through the grades, all those behaviors are going to be magnified. If we can get a handle on it like we're doing with the early grades and moving up through the process, I think, like I said, it's a multifaceted issue, but I think as you see many of those changes coming to bear, you're going to see improved behavior.
Let's give each of you a minute or so to just share some final thoughts with our listeners. Kimberly Plocke.
Well, I think that this is a very exciting time in Racine Unified Schools, and I really do believe that positive momentum is building. Again, the reading and math scores have shown significant growth in the early grades. In 2016, our overall graduation rates increased by nearly 6%. That's the highest increase in the state. That doesn't happen by accident. With hundreds of additional high school freshmen having completed key early courses towards graduation, which is another indicator, these numbers are set to increase significantly. We have a three-year focus on behavior issues, and we know that that has to be a very strong focus. And these positive trends show that I believe that Racine Unified is headed in the right direction. But we have a long way to go to attain our goal of graduating every student career college ready. Again, we have the most talented staff working diligently with every student so that that student has the opportunity to excel. With all the things we talked about, it's clear this is not always easy. This is a very difficult and hard job, and it really requires support and leadership and professional development, which I'm a very strong advocate of. And I believe that we do, for the first time in many years, have the leadership in place to continue this progress and keep improving our results. And I feel that I've been a very integral part of ensuring that we stay on this track as a board member, and I would like to see that we continue to make this progress.
Julie McKenna.
I believe the students in Racine Unified School District deserves a quality education, and education is the key to success. I would like to continue to work on the board to continue in working on my dream of having educational needs met of all students. One of the things that we didn't get a chance to talk about during the interview is relationship building. That's something that we need to improve our internal relationships. And one of the things I didn't mention earlier on, that as a board member, I've been awarded this last year for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards Level 5. I'm a hard worker, and I've been the chair of the legislative and been chair of previous other committees, so I feel I have experienced leadership. And my goal is really to try to move Racine Unified into a culture of excellence and practicing and maintaining that culture, and to enable to achieve the mission to educate every student to succeed. And thank you for the opportunity today.
Julie McKenna, Kimberly Plocke, the candidates in the 4th District of the Racine Unified School District School Board elections coming up now in early April. Thank you to both of you for being here for what I think was an interesting and helpful conversation. Best wishes to you both, and again, thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, you'll be hearing from the two candidates in the 9th District of the Racine Unified School District, Kurt Squire and Robert Witke Jr., and we'll hear from the candidates in the 5th District on Friday's Morning Show. To finish out today's program, we're going to be hearing briefly from military historian and novelist Ralph Peters. This is a conversation which we recorded at the time of the publication of his historical novel called Valley of the Shadow, like most of his books set in the time of the American Civil War. I asked Mr. Peters to explain his fascination with the genre of historical fiction.
Well, one of the problems with historical fiction is it's got such a bad reputation, because frankly, too much of it is hysterical fiction, or more fiction than history, and a lot of it is candy-coated, romanticized, even politically correct. And what I'm striving to do is really, we don't have the term, you know, that we have to categorize everything, so it's categorized as historical fiction. To me, it's dramatized history, because I am literally obsessed with getting every detail right, you know, not just the weather that day, but the weather at a given time of day. Was it wheat or rye in that field? What kind of hat did that particular officer wear? And it may seem, you know, a bit mad, but to me, if you get the details all right, the environment of the past, the atmosphere of the past, emerges almost magically. And so while you don't want to burden the reader with details, you have to be selective in their use. You have to know them. And so what I'm trying to do, and it's an ambitious goal, but you have to have ambitious goals in life, I think. My goal is to write the most authentic historical novels possible. So these books, except for Cain at Gettysburg, a few of the enlisted characters were composites. But in this book, The Valley of the Shadow, about the fighting in the Shenandoah Valley in 1864, dramatic, decisive fighting, every character is a historical figure. They're based upon their letters home, letters to them, their diaries, their official reports, their memoirs, as well as some superb research done by modern historians. And I don't want to slight them either. But people ask me, how long did it take you to write Valley of the Shadow? And the answer is over half a century. Because I was grew up in the late 50s and 60s during the centennial of the Civil War. Seems so long ago now. And I was fascinated. I was captivated. And I wrote my first book on the Civil War when I was in seventh grade, almost published by Scribner's. A blessing that it wasn't, because it was pretty bad, but they saw it as a novelty item, you know, Civil War history by this kid. But it's been an interest of mine all my life. I'm not a golfer. I'm this is my vice, as it were. And so it took me a long time to feel confident enough to write these books. You know, I served as an enlisted man, as a career officer, which helped immeasurably in understanding soldiers, of course, and how things really happen. I mean, oftentimes historians will ask, well, why did General X do this? It's obvious. Well, General X might have not have slept for 3 days. He might have had diarrhea or toothache. His soldiers were exhausted. The food the rations hadn't been delivered. You learn as a sergeant or a junior officer how hard it is to get a squad of 10 or a dozen men up when they're cold and wet in the middle of the night and get them moving. Well, how much harder is it to get 12,000 men up or 120,000 men and get them moving? So I think my military service taught me how hard things can be. And Clausewitz said that in war, everything is simple, but the simplest things are very, very hard. And that aphorism has a lot of truth in it. So at any rate, what am I trying to do with historical fiction? To make it historically accurate, because I have a secret agenda. And that agenda is to reacquaint Americans with a history we've forgotten. I want to get it as accurately as possible, and I want to move beyond the most famous names, which all we remember now, Lee, Grant, Stonewall Jackson, Jeb Stuart, Sherman, or the big battles, and talk about the incredible drama of this continent-spanning war that really shaped the next 150 years and is still shaping things today.
Ralph Peters, his historical novel is Valley of the Shadow. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Cloudy and windy today with light rain showers and scattered thunderstorms, a high of 59 degrees. Cloudy, foggy, windy, mild tonight with more rain, possibly thunderstorms, a low of 54. Tomorrow, Thursday, cloudy and again a 60% chance of rain with a high of 59 degrees. A little cooler over the weekend, temperatures in the 40s with a